want you to picture the floor of a mid-sized plating operation. You know the sound, the constant low-frequency hum of the rectifiers, the rhythmic rattle of the flight bars moving overhead, that distinct, sharp smell of chemistry in the air?
Oh yeah, it's unmistakable.
You've got a reel-to-reel line running at full capacity, churning out contacts for, an automotive application. Let's just say, for the sake of the math, you're consuming 5,000 troy ounces of gold annually.
Which is a pretty significant volume for a mid-sized player. At current market rates, that is a massive, massive amount of capital flowing through those tanks every single shift.
It is. It really is. And on the surface, everything looks efficient. Product is moving, QA is passing parts, the line speed is, optimized. But there is a ghost in the machine. A silent killer we call dragout.
Right.
Now, most plant managers, they look at a 3% loss and they dismiss it. They say, it's physics, it's a rounding error, it's just the cost of doing business.
But let's pause and actually run the math on that rounding error. Because in our world, in the world of precision engineering, decimals matter. They matter a lot.
Exactly. So 3% of 5,000 ounces is 150 ounces of gold. Even if we are being conservative at, say, $2,000 an ounce.
You're talking about $300,000.
$300,000 to $350,000.
Right.
And that's not in overhead. It's not in labor costs. That is in raw material that is literally vanishing. It's dripping onto the floor. It's getting stuck in filter cartridges. It's adhering to the rags used to wipe down a tank. Or worst of all, it's going straight down the drain into the wastewater treatment system.
We call this the invisible hemorrhage. It's a massive leak in the balance sheet that no modern P&L can justify. Yet, because it happens in milligrams and microns, it's ignored. It's a death by a thousand cuts, but the cuts are made of gold.
Welcome to Reflections. I'm Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
If you're with us today, you probably live your life in microns. We're talking to the engineers, the supply chain directors, the QA leads who are responsible for mission-critical components. You're the people keeping the lights on and, the data flowing.
Our mission here is to take the things you grapple with every single day, cost, efficiency, sustainability, and break them down into actionable strategies. We aren't here to read you a textbook. We're here to help you streamline the process, slash costs, and stop the bleeding.
And today we are going deep into a topic that is usually relegated to the back of the factory, that dark corner near the loading dock that nobody really likes to visit.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about the black box of precious metal reclamation.
This is all about moving from a mindset of scrap and pray to a precision-engineered ecosystem. It's about realizing that your waste stream is actually a revenue stream if you have the discipline to treat it that way.
So let's unpack this. We started with that terrifying number 300 grand lost on a dragout that nobody even notices. But that loss, it's just a symptom, right? What is the underlying condition here? When we look at the industry broadly, what is the status quo?
The status quo is what I call the janitorial mindset. For decades, if you look at how manufacturing plants operate, reclamation has been viewed as a back-end obligation. It's treated like taking out the trash. It's messy, it's sludge, it's spent resin. It's something you deal with after the real work of production is done.
Right. It's the stuff you sweep up on a Friday afternoon when you just want to go home. The cleanup job.
Precisely. And because it's viewed as waste, it's treated with a total lack of sophistication.
Hmm.
The standard method is what we call scrap and pray. You accumulate this mixed waste in drums, sludge, filters, wipes, old anodes, whatever you find on the floor.
Anything and everything.
Throw it all together, put it on a truck, ship it to a third party, and then you wait.
You wait a long time. A really long time.
You wait months. Sometimes a full quarter goes by. And eventually, a check arrives in the mail. And here is the kicker. Here's the part that's just insane to me. You have absolutely no idea how that number was calculated.
None.
You sent out a black box of waste, and you got back a black box payment.
That is the definition of opacity. It's wild, because in any other part of the business, that would never, ever fly. If you ordered 5,000 connectors, and the supplier sent you a sealed box and said, there's some amount in here, just trust us, it's roughly right, you'd fire them immediately.
You would. You'd demand an audit. You'd demand a recount. Yet, in reclamation, this opacity creates what we call the black box tax. Because the refining return is so unclear, it masks all these other operational inefficiencies. We estimate that manufacturers are losing anywhere from 5 to 15% in unrealized revenue purely due to this lack of visibility.
5 to 15%. I want to just dwell on that for a second. We aren't talking about market fluctuation here. We aren't talking about the price of gold going down. We are talking about pure margin. that you are voluntarily surrendering because you don't audit the return.
It creates a strategic blindness. I've been on countless floors where the plant manager knows they bought X amount of metal, they shipped Y amount of product, but the numbers don't add up. There is a delta, a huge gap.
The unknown loss.
Exactly. They cannot reconcile the purchased metal weight with the shipped product plus the reclaimed waste. And because they can't reconcile it, they can't diagnose where the loss is happening. Is it the plating cells? Is it the rinse tank? Is it the strip line? Is it theft? They don't know.
So they are frozen. You can't fix what you can't measure. You're just flying completely blind.
And in an environment where gold is volatile, constantly above $2,000, sticking with the standard recovery rate of 85 or 90% is just bleeding capital. It's a luxury you just can't afford anymore.
Okay, so we've established that the current way of doing things, this shipping and forgetting, is fundamentally broken. It's a legacy of a time when gold was, what, $400 an ounce? But we aren't there anymore. So what is the shift? How do we actually stop the bleeding?
We need to redefine the approach entirely. We have to move from waste management to resource lifecycle management. And it all starts with a fundamental principle of physics.
The law of conservation of matter.
Right. Matter is neither created nor destroyed. It is simply misplaced.
I love that framing. Because it's not magic. That gold didn't just disappear into another dimension. It is somewhere in your factory. It's in the filters, it's on the floor, it's in the water, or it's in the resin.
Exactly. Millions of dollars in palladium and gold vanish, not because of some grand theft, but because of process inefficiency. The paradigm shift is what we call design for reclamation.
Design for reclamation. Break that down for the engineer listening right now. What does that mean in practical terms?
It means that recovery shouldn't start at the refinery. It shouldn't start when the drum leaves your loading dock. Recovery must start at the plating line design phase. It requires a completely different philosophy about how you even set up your line.
This reminds me of the philosophy we see from Precious Plate. They talk about the arts and sciences of reclamation.
Yes. And that duality is absolutely critical. On one hand, you have the science. That's the empirical rigor, stoichiometry, analytical chemistry. Understanding the exact molecular composition of your waste streams, you need to know chemically what is happening in that tank. You need to know the pH, the specific gravity, the concentration of solids, all the hard numbers.
What about the hard data? That's the lab coat stuff.
That's the lab coat stuff. But then you have the art, and that is the strategic ingenuity. That's workflow design, creative logistics. It's having the business strategy to design workflows that minimize the concentration of waste in the first place. It's seeing the flow of materials through the factory floor, not just as production, but as a complete cycle.
So it requires a dual mindset from the engineer on the floor. You need the technical precision to analyze parts per million in the rinse water, but you also need the business savvy to structure your line so that you aren't creating a huge mess to begin with.
Exactly. It is about marrying the rigidity of the laboratory with the fluidity of business strategy. If you only have one of those, you lose money, period.
Let's get into the nuts and bolts of this then. We've got this philosophy designed for reclamation. But how does it actually work on the floor? The data we're looking at breaks this down into three core pillars. Let's start with pillar one, operational precision. This is the technical side, the science.
The first rule of operational precision is simple, but it's very often ignored. Segregation.
Stop mixing everything together.
Stop mixing everything together. In the old way, the janitorial mindset, you'd see a drum containing cyanide solutions, acid solutions, maybe some filter cartridges, some rags, all thrown in together. This is a cardinal sin in reclamation.
Now, play devil's advocate for me for a second. Why does it matter if the refiner is just going to burn it or process it anyway? Why can't they just sort it out at their facility? Isn't that their job?
Two big reasons. First, let's just talk chemistry. Commingling heterogeneous materials dramatically reduces refining efficiency. If you mix cyanide and acid, aside from the very real safety hazard of potentially creating hydrogen cyanide gas, which is lethal.
Right, a major safety issue.
A huge safety issue. But beyond that, you are creating a chemical soup that is much, much harder to separate. You are increasing the chemical energy required to extract the gold. You are making the refiner work harder, use more chemicals, use more energy.
Which directly drives up the treatment charge you pay.
Correct. But the second reason is even more important, and it relates directly to your payout. Sampling bias. Think about material grades. If you have high-grade metal strip, let's say chopped-up contacts that are practically pure gold or a highly concentrated alloy, and you mix that with low-grade resin or sludge, you are diluting the sample.
Right, because when they do an assay, they're taking a tiny sample of the whole lot.
Exactly, a very small sample. And if the material isn't homogeneous, that sample might not represent the whole lot at all. You might have a nugget of pure gold hidden in a clump of sludge that doesn't make it into the sample crucible.
So you get paid for the sludge, not the nugget.
Precisely. By segregating, treating high-grade metal strip differently than low-grade resin, you maximize the yield of each. You get a precise assay for the strip and a precise assay for the resin. You remove the variable of chance from your paycheck.
Speaking of assays, that's the second part of this pillar, right? Advanced assaying. We aren't just looking at things and guessing based on color or weight.
No, absolutely not. We are talking about using the right tool for the job. For liquids, you use ICP spectrometry inductively coupled plasma.
For those who haven't used one, describe what that is. How does it actually find the gold in the water?
An ICP machine is a fascinating piece of equipment. It essentially injects the liquid sample into a plasma torch. And we're talking about argon gas heated to something like 10,000 degrees Celsius.
So hotter than the surface of the sun.
Much hotter. And this extreme heat breaks the fluid down into its constituent atoms and ions. As those atoms cool, they emit light at very specific wavelengths, like a unique fingerprint for each element. The machine reads that light intensity. It is incredibly precise for fluids, down to parts per billion.
So if there is a single atom of gold hiding in that rinse water, the ICP will find it.
It will. It absolutely will. But for solids, you can't just inject them into a plasma torch.
No. For solids like resins or metallic scrap, you use the traditional fire assay, also known as cupellation.
It's an ancient technique. It literally goes back thousands of years, but it is still the gold standard for solids for a reason. You melt the sample with a specific flux in a crucible, you separate the precious metal from the slag, and then you weigh the resulting bead of metal. It requires immense skill and experience to do correctly.
But there is a human element here too, right? The concept of the witnessed burn. I find this concept really powerful in an industry that is so often closed off and opaque.
This is critical for building trust. A witnessed burn is exactly what it sounds like. The manufacturer, the client, is invited to witness the entire sampling process. They can send their engineers to the refinery. They watch their material go into the incinerator. They watch the grinding. They watch the cone and quartering of the sample to ensure randomness.
That blows the black box wide open. It's total transparency.
It does. It completely demystifies the process. It allows the engineer to observe the data integrity firsthand. You aren't just taking someone's word for it. You are seeing the physics happen. You see your material turn into the exact sample that determines your payment. It changes the relationship from purely transactional to truly collaborative.
I want to touch on the third part of this operational pillar because I think it's my favorite. Drag out minimization.
Ah, yes. This is where the plater who refines perspective really comes into play.
Right, because a company like Precious Plate isn't just a refiner. They are platers. They run lines every day. They understand that the best way to reclaim metal is to never lose in the first place.
Precisely. Drag out minimization is all about consulting on the front end. It's about understanding surface tension, gravity, and viscosity. It's about optimizing the process before the waste is even created.
Give us a concrete example of a fix here. What does a drag out fix look like on the line for someone listening?
Okay, take dwell times. When the rack lifts out of the gold tank, how long does it hover there before moving to the rinse? If you increase that dwell time by just 3 seconds, allowing gravity to do its work, how much gold drips back into the tank versus carrying over to the rinse?
It sounds so trivial, 3 seconds, but over a million cycles.
It's kilograms of gold. It adds up incredibly fast. Or think about air knives using high-velocity air to physically shear the liquid off the part before it leaves the station. Or counterflow rinses, where you move water opposite the direction of the part to maximize cleaning efficiency with minimal water usage.
It's all about engineering the line so the gold stays in the bath.
It's treating the refiner as a partner in efficiency, not just a garbage collector. It's about understanding the physics of dragout and fighting it at the source, not just cleaning up the mess afterward.
So if you get this right, if you segregate, if you assay correctly, if you minimize dragout, you are physically recovering more metal. You are winning the physics battle. But that's only one third of the equation. We need to talk about the money.
The financial ecosystem, yes.
But before we dive into that, let's take a quick pause here. We've thrown a lot of technical information out there. Let's do a quick reset for the listeners who might be multitasking or driving in their car.
Good idea. If you take three things away from the first half of this deep dive, here they are.
Number one, stop the bleed. This grab and pray method shipping, mixed waste, and hoping for the best is costing you 5 to 15% in lost revenue. It is a tax you do not have to pay.
Number two, Segregate at source. Do not mix your waste streams. Keep your high-grade alloys separate from your low-grade resins and sludges. Mixing kills efficiency and absolutely ruins assay accuracy.
And number three, front-end engineering. True recovery starts with line design. Optimizing drag out and dwell times keeps the value where it belongs. In your process, not in your waste.
Okay, so let's talk finance, because even if you recover every last milligram of metal, if you manage the money poorly, you still lose.
Exactly. So pillar two is the financial ecosystem. And this starts with a critique of the check in the mail.
Right. In the traditional model, the refiner processes your scrap and sends you a check. That sounds great on the surface, right? Cash in hand, liquidity.
Who doesn't like a check? It feels like found money.
The CFO doesn't like it, or at least they shouldn't, because receiving a check creates a taxable event. You've sold that scrap. It hits the books as revenue. But chances are, you are a plater. You need that metal back to keep plating, so now you have to take that cash and go buy new gold.
And you're buying it back at a premium every single time.
You are hitting the buy-sell spread. You sold low at scrap price, and now you are buying high at market price, plus the fabrication premium. You are losing margin on the transaction itself. It's like you're effectively changing currency at the airport kiosk twice. You lose both ways.
So what is the alternative? How do we avoid that friction, that unnecessary cost?
Metal pool accounts.
Explain that concept for the non-finance folks listening. What is a pool account?
Instead of a check, the refiner credits the recovered metal directly to a pool account that's in your name. Think of it like a bank account, but instead of dollars, the balance is in troy ounces. You have 100 ounces of gold in your account managed by the refiner.
So the metal never really leaves your ownership. It just changes form from scrap back to usable metal.
Exactly. And this creates what we call a natural hedge. By keeping the asset in metal form, you are insulated from daily spot price fluctuations. If gold jumps to $2,500 an ounce, your pool account value goes up with it. If it drops, you still have the physical ounces you need for production. You are reducing your market exposure.
That is incredibly strategic.
Yeah.
You aren't gambling on the market. You are just maintaining your working inventory.
And you avoid the transaction costs of constantly buying and selling. You just draw from your pool account when you need to make a new plating bath or add to an existing one. It smooths out the cash flow in a really significant way.
Now, there's another financial benefit here regarding treatment charges. We touched on this with segregation.
Yes. This is where operations meet finance directly. If you do that operational work, if you pre-process and segregate your waste correctly, you are making the refiner's job easier. You are reducing the chemistry, the electricity, and the time required to refine that material.
And that savings should come back to you. It has to.
It should. An integrated partner, a true partner, will pass those efficiency savings back to you, the manufacturer, in the form of lower treatment fees. If you send a clean, segregated lot of high-grade material, you should pay less than the guy sending a toxic soup of mixed waste. It should be a meritocracy.
That makes total sense. It incentivizes good behavior on the factory floor. It connects the line operator's actions directly to the company's bottom line.
And finally, under the financial pillar, we have velocity.
Speed. The speed of money.
The speed of settlement. In the old black box world, you might wait 3 or 4 months for a settlement. That is working capital that is trapped in a drum on a pallet somewhere. That is money you can't use to buy equipment, pay staff, or invest in R&D.
It's dead money.
Yeah.
Completely unproductive.
With streamlined assay workflows, like the ones a sophisticated refiner like Precious Plate uses, you can get settlement in days, not months. That dramatically improves your working capital velocity. You can deploy that value back into the business almost immediately.
So we have fixed the operations.
Yeah.
We've optimized the finances. But we operate in the real world, which is full of rules, regulations, and geopolitical nightmares. That leads us to pillar three, strategic risk and compliance.
This is the landscape we operate in, and it is getting more treacherous every single year. The regulatory environment is not getting simpler, it's getting more complex.
Let's talk about regulatory velocity. What does that mean?
It means the rules are changing fast. You have RCRA, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act here in the US. You have the Basel Convention internationally, which controls the movement of hazardous waste across borders. The definitions of what constitutes hazardous waste are tightening constantly.
And a lot of manufacturers think, well, I hired a trucking company, I shipped it out, I have a manifest, it's not my problem anymore.
That is the single most dangerous myth in the entire industry. Shipping and forgetting is not an extinguishment of liability. It is just a transfer of custody. It is not a transfer of responsibility. If that truck crashes and spills cyanide sludge on the highway, or if that third-party refiner dumps your sludge illegally,
you are on the hook.
Yeah.
Legally and financially.
You are absolutely on the hook. The EPA comes knocking on your door. They don't care that you paid someone else to take it. They care that your waste caused a problem. That is why you need what we call a regulatory shield.
And this is where certifications like ISO 14001.201 come into play.
Yes. You need a partner who operates under those strict environmental standards. But more than that, you need a cradle-to-grave audit trail. You need to know where every single kilogram of your waste went, from your dock to its final disposition.
You need paper. You need documentation.
You need bulletproof paper. You need to be able to indemnify yourself against downstream liability. If you can prove with documentation that your waste was handled, refined, and repurposed according to the highest global standards, you are shielded. If you can't prove it, you are vulnerable.
That is risk management 101. But there's also an upside here, specifically regarding supply chain resilience. We hear the term ESG constantly. Environmental, social, and governance.
ESG is huge right now, and sometimes it feels like a corporate buzzword. But here's the concrete connection for you. By recovering and reusing your own metal via a pool account, you are actively reducing your reliance on primary mining.
You aren't buying new gold dug out of the ground somewhere.
Correct. And primary mining is incredibly energy intensive and often happens in geopolitically unstable regions of the world. By closing the loop and using your own recycled metal, you are securing your supply chain. You are less vulnerable to a mine strike in South Africa or a new sanction in Russia.
So it's a security play, not just an environmental one.
It is a massive security play. You are essentially creating your own internal mine inside your factory. You become self-sustaining to a degree that was impossible before.
I want to move to validation now, because this all sounds great in theory, physics, finance, strategy, but does it actually work in the real world? The data we're looking at cites some specific examples.
It does, and the numbers are incredibly compelling. Let's look at the automotive sector. There was a tier one connector, manufacturer, high volume, razor thin margins, incredibly high quality standard.
The classic grind. If they miss a shipment by an hour, the entire assembly line stops.
Exactly. They implemented this tripartite system we've been talking about. They started segregating their waste streams, they switched to pool accounts to hedge their risk, and they brought in experts to help optimize drag out on the line. Year over year, they saw a 9.4% increase in total metal recovery.
Nearly 10%. That's unheard of.
Think about that. That is pure profit dropping straight to the bottom line. That isn't selling more product. That is just stopping the leaks in the existing process. In the automotive world, a 9% margin improvement is just. It's a game changer.
And there was an aerospace example in there too, right?
Yes, an aerospace supplier. A very different world. Lower volume, but much higher value components. They were dealing with palladium, extremely expensive, extremely volatile market, and absolutely critical for their components. By closing the loop and implementing this rigorous tracking and recovery system, they reclaimed $1.2 million in lost palladium.
$1.2 million.
That is not a rounding error. That is a game changer for a division's entire annual budget. That pays for a lot of R&D. That pays for new equipment.
It really highlights the cost of inaction, the cost of just sticking with the status quo.
That is the key takeaway here. In an industry defined by micrometers, where you measure your success in microns, you cannot afford to measure your financial success with a yardstick. You can't just guess or feel like you're doing okay.
The status quo, that janitorial view of reclamation, is a luxury.
It is a luxury no competitive manufacturer can afford. If you are competing globally, you cannot afford to have a 5, 10, or 15% inefficiency built into your material costs. Your competitors will eat you alive.
So bringing this all together now, we're looking for a vision of the future. What does the optimized factory actually look like?
Imagine a facility where that unknown loss line item on your P&L shrinks to zero. Where the plating line and the reclamation loop are perfectly synchronized. The waste from the line flows seamlessly into the recovery system, the data from the assay flows seamlessly into the finance system, and the value flows right back into the pool account.
It's a closed loop, a true circular economy inside your own four walls.
It's operational excellence. It isn't theoretical. This is the new standard. And frankly, if you aren't doing it, your competitors probably are, or they're figuring out how to.
That's a sobering thought. But it's also an empowering one. Because the solution is there. It's about applying that arts and sciences mindset we talked about at the beginning.
It's about taking control. You aren't just recovering metal, you are recovering control of your business. You are taking destiny into your own hands instead of leaving it in a barrel on a loading dock.
And that is a perfect place to land this. We've unpacked the problem, we've built the pillars of the solution, and we've seen the proof. Now, for everyone listening, the ball's in your court.
Don't let the unknown loss continue. Every single day you wait is ounces of gold down the drain.
Here are your next steps. First, if you want to understand the depth of what we discussed today, you need to join the email list and visit the source. Go to preciousplate.com.
There are resources there, there are case studies, and more details on how this entire ecosystem works.
But if you are serious, if you are hearing these numbers and you're thinking about your own P&L right now, you need to pick up the phone. Stop guessing. Call a surface finishing engineer directly.
The number is 716-283-0690.
I'll say that again for you. 716-283-0690. Talk to a human who understands both the chemistry and the commerce.
Turn your waste streams into revenue streams. It's that simple and it's that important.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden ledger of manufacturing. I'm Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
Keep reflecting and keep refining. We'll see you next time.